So last time, so we considered the tiering model. Where the fields are chiral and anti-chiral free fermions. With the usual kinetic term, and a quartic interaction, psi I, psi j, psi tilde, I, psi tilde j. So the quartic interaction, so these are the fundamental and anti-fundamental representations, again, fundamental, anti-fundamental of UN. And the quartic interaction is the only UN invariant marginal interaction we can write down. Easy to calculate that. So this is a kind of very, very canonical theory. And we saw that this theory appeared from the Fourier point of view. We work on R2 times C, and at Z0, we can put a chiral fermion. Z1 with the anti-chiral fermions, which are coupled to the gauge field. So now I've suppressed the Lie algebra indices. And we saw that if we integrate out at A, we generate the quartic interaction. So the goal of today's talk is to explain how this is a useful point of view to help understand some features of these models. So I understand Pedro discussed models closely related to these ones, such as the Sine-Gordon model and the ON model. And he talked about the scattering matrix, but I don't think he didn't talk about Jungian symmetry in these models, did he?
No, I didn't think so.
Yeah, so. So yeah, so let me introduce the kind of classical point of view on the Jungian symmetry in these models and explain how to see it from this point of view. So because this chiral fermion, building in the fundamental and anti-fundamental representations, because it can be coupled to a gauge field, there's a current, which is the thing which allows it to be coupled to a gauge field. So the chiral fermion has a current. Which is just given by how it couples to a gauge field. So if we have a 2D gauge field, then the way it couples is the integral psi d bar. If we replace this d bar by covariant derivative, we add on an expression like psi d bar psi sub a is just the psi I d bar psi upper I plus the integral. Psi I A I J X plus or maybe minus I A I J Y Psi J. Because it couples to the, you know, the DW bar component, the X plus I Y component of the connection, because it's a chiral fermion. So we, from this expression, we can read off what the currents are. The current in the X direction is psi I psi j, and the current in the y direction is also psi I psi j up to this factor of minus I. So. So minus I. And similarly, on the antichiral theory, we have, we can do the same little calculation, and we can find there are currents telling us how it couples to the connection in the x and y directions. And we find the same expressions with a plus sign. I said tilde. Okay. So I hope this is familiar to people. So there's this kind of beautiful story, which I must say I don't understand as well as I would like to, and I think Pedro would understand it much better than me, about how given a 2D theory with a G action, one can sometimes produce from these currents a Yangian symmetry in the 2D theory. And the generators of the Yangian are realized as the integrals of local plus bilocal things over a line. So let me write down the expressions that appear in the literature. And we'll see how we can derive this kind of thing by thinking about this 4D theory. Okay. Well, let me just say, of course, the full current is the sum of the chiral and antichiral. The way people write down the Yangian symmetry is we think of the x direction as being like space and the y direction as being like time. So we define an operator, kind of a charge, I suppose, if you want. It's non-local, it's integrated over a line. T I j 0. And this is going to correspond to the level 0 generators of the Yangian that we discussed before. Remember, the Yangian has generators where there's an index there which can take an integer value. And this is just defined as the integral over x of the ij component of the current in the x direction. And so this is the easy one to define. But people also define the level 1 generator, and the kind of expression you see for this looks a little bit funny. So the first term is the integral over x of the y component of the current. So this is a bit bizarre. And then the second term, there's some factor of 2, is a bilocal quantity. Okay. So the standard results that people derive in this literature about integrable field theories is the following. So firstly, these guys are conserved. Conserved charges, which means that it doesn't matter where we put the line. Can move the contour of integration and, okay, so the more interesting claim is that these operators satisfy the relations of the Yangian. So that these satisfy the ordinary relations of the Lie algebra. So delta k j d I l 0 minus delta I l d k j 0, etc. But that, as we saw, these level one generators, and I'm using the same notation we had before, satisfy, if I put a 1 and a 1, there's some non-trivial quantum correction to those commutation relations. And the claim is that that non-trivial quantum correction is indeed seen by these operators. And that. It's a non-trivial correction. Given by the RTT relation. Yeah.
So I don't quite remember how the formulas go, but sort of thought that there was some recursive relation between them. So shouldn't I be able to generate all the higher t's by?
Yeah, you generate all the higher t's just by from these
uh-huh,
two.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So, like t2 is roughly a commutator of t1 t1 minus t0 squared or something like that. So mm-hmm. there's some relation like that. So all the higher t's are. So you just need to write down these first two, and then you get everything else.
Does it give something interesting in terms of these chiral charges?
I'm sure people have studied this question. Like in the papers I've looked at, they don't write down a formula for what the other guys are. So from the point of view we're going to see here, there will be some, like in principle you could derive some expression, but it will be very complicated. So I'm not, I won't be able to get very far with that. So as I said, I'm not totally an expert in this kind of thing, so I hope I'm not saying something wrong, and this is more Petter's bailiwick in mind. Okay, so how would we see this from the point of view of field theory? So what we would do is the same thing. We're going to just repeat. We made this argument earlier. Why does the Yangian act on the Hilbert space of an open spin chain where there's no periodic boundary conditions? And we made this argument that you could just see the RTT relation from a vertical Wilson line acting on a bunch of horizontal Wilson lines. Now we're going to repeat exactly the same argument, except that the Wilson line will be replaced by a surface operator. So let me draw the picture. at C0, I might have some size. And Z1, I might have some psi, Zytilus, the anti-chiral guys. And at some other point, Z, which is near infinity, I'm going to put a line operator. We have a it has incoming states and outgoing states. So if we integrate out the gauge field, A, then what we find, the fermionic systems get coupled. And then well, the line operator gets coupled to them as well. But remember we had this discussion last time about, you know, I might have a propagator connecting these guys, kind of exchange of gluons. But if you remember in our discussion, we thought about how if we fix the gauge so that the complex plane is compactified to a very small P1, that the gauge field doesn't really propagate in the xy direction any appreciable amount. So we can always think of the gauge field as not propagating in the xy direction. So the way these are coupled, it only changes the fermionic system along the location of this line. So this line, there's a local coupling between some line and this guy, so there's a line defect. So the Wilson line, gives a line defect. Now, what's a line defect? A line defect is just, the simplest kind of line defect might be just some expression you build from integrating local operators along the line. You might integrate one local operator, or two local operators, or three local operators, or any number of them. So these expressions we wrote down here, these look like what one might find in a line defect. So I'm going to try to argue that these line defects are in a kind of first-order approximation given by these expressions. So this line defect is conserved. Because of the topological symmetry. And also, we have these states at either end. So once I put the states at the end of the line defect, we got the operators Tij of z, which we can expand as a series in the usual way. Define an action of the Yangian on the Hilbert space. Okay, any questions about this formal picture? So what I'm going to try to do is just think about what are the expressions we find when we exchange gluons like that. So the first thing we might think of is, well, so let's draw this picture again. This is at z0, this is at z1, this is at some point to say z, about in the middle. So if we exchange one gluon, well, the propagator, as we discussed last time, because we're in this regime where everything, nothing propagates in the xy direction, the propagator is like 1 over z minus z0, which of course we can expand in powers of 1 over z. So the exchange of a single gluon will lead to a local operator here. Well, if we just look at the 1 over z term in this expansion, we'll find Tij0 will be 1 at the integral over x, where I'm viewing it as a local operator here. So this one, this term will come from the gluon going from here to this surface operator, and we'll find the same term So this is just the integral over x of jx, dx. That's what we expect. That's what we had before as the first level 0 generator of the Young. Of course, this is obvious. I mean, there's nothing else. There's nothing subtle here. The subtlety will happen at the next order. Because all we're saying, there's nothing subtle because this is just the integral of the over the current and kind of not much else it could really be. So let's consider, let's consider what might happen at the next order. Just to kind of suggest, well, I think I'm not going to be able to get every detail of this one right, because there was some calculation I had trouble doing of a certain thermodiagram integral. Draw this picture again. And let's try to think about what kind of gluon exchanges might lead to a 1 over z squared term. Well, there's an obvious one where a gluon goes from there to there. And maybe one goes from there to there. Because this will give rise to something of the form 1 over z minus z. This gluon exchange will give rise to something of the form 1 over z minus z0. And this one will give rise to something of the form 1 over z minus z1. We're taking the product of them, so I'll pick up a 1 over z squared term. Near at z is infinity, that is a double 0. So this term this gives rise to to 1 over z minus c0, z minus c1 times the integral over x less than x prime. So this is x and x prime. So in this particular diagram, what we're finding here, this is coupled by the chiral current, this is coupled by the anti-chiral current. So that's what this particular picture gives you. But of course, there's some other possibilities. This gluon could go to that guy. This one could go to that guy. They could both go to the same side. So summing up all the four possibilities. So we get the integral of x less than x prime okay. So this is exactly the kind of thing we wanted. It's one of the terms in the standard formulas for the level 1 generators. But there should be other terms too, because there will be terms given by diagrams which are connected, living at the same point here, and that will be given by a local integral instead of a bilocal integral. So the next thing we want to check is that the terms which give you the local integral are related to the current Jy. And we'll try to explain this kind of strange phenomenon. So to see that, let's look back up at this diagram and notice even the exchange of a single gluon has a 1 over z squared term in it. So let's include those terms. There is z0 over z squared. Z squared times the integral of the chiral current plus z1 over z squared times the integral of the anti-chiral current. Now, there is some freedom to shift. Everything has a symmetry of shifting in the z-plane. One thing, you know, we're not allowed to have z0 equal z1 because there will be UV divergence. But we could move things around so that they're opposite, for instance. So we can assume that z1 is equal to minus z0. So then we get 1 over z squared. Say z0 over z squared times the integral of the chiral current minus the anti-chiral current. And we can always, as I said, make this assumption by using the translation symmetry. And now we notice that the chiral current minus the anti-chiral current is the current in the y direction, up to a factor of y. Up to some factor of pi, which we'll ignore. Great, so we find that the first two most obvious terms we can write down at order 1 over z squared reproduce exactly the formulas people write for the standard action of the Yang-Yin on these theories. So any questions about this calculation so far? Yeah.
Jy is the difference of the chiral and anti-chiral current?
Yeah, because
by definition?
Like the Jx, the chiral current,
yeah.
the chiral guy is coupled by x minus I y. So the x direction of the chiral current is equal to minus I times the y direction of the chiral current. So similarly, the x direction of the antichiral current is equal to I times the y direction of it.
Yeah,
so up to some factor of I.
It's different than you define.
Is it they rotate?
Yeah.
So there's one more term that can contribute, and I haven't quite finished the analysis of this term. So I'm which is something that I could have a gluon coming off. Splitting into two. And joining the two surfaces. So I think I'm going to have to skip the analysis of this term. My feeling is that this term will not appear there's a number of scales hanging around. What do we treat the theory on the surfaces classically, or we want to treat the gauge theory at a quantum level, and this kind of thing. So these currents are the right currents for when we rewrite the gauge theory on the surfaces classically. And my feeling is that this will be some quantum correction to those currents. So I'll skip the analysis of this for now. So I wanted to move on to a discussion of the beta function of these theories. So 2D integrable theories seem to be never conformal. They always seem to have a non-trivial beta function and it'd be massive. So in perturbation theory, one can see this very easily. So if we consider the Thiering model, which has an action of this form, this has a one-loop beta function. Which changes the parameter C. So how do we see this? We see this just by computing a Feynman diagram. So this diagram where here I might have psi tilde, and on the edges, on one edge the psi fields propagate, and the other edge the psi tilde fields propagate. This is the propagator for psi. Propagator for psi tilde. So this diagram it's a logarithmic divergence. versus a Wundt loop diagram. Diagrams are logarithmic diversions. I hope this is something, calculations like this are things that people can do. However, in my view, one can never spend too much time on calculating beta functions, things like this, because I think I'll just run through the calculation of this, and then we'll see how to explain it from a four-dimensional point of view. And it has a nice geometric interpretation. Well, how do we see this? Well, the psi field has a d by dz bar in the kinetic term. So this leads to, let's call this w, actually, sorry. This leads to a propagator, which is formally 1 over d by dw bar. But you can calculate this by Fourier transform, for instance, to be 1 over 2 pi I, 1 over w. The point is that d by dw bar times 1 over w is 2 pi I times a delta function at 0. This is essentially a fancy way of writing the residue formula, because you can prove this by thinking about contour integrals. So, it's convenient to give an integral representation of this. So note, I'm going to drop the factor of 2 pi I because I'm lazy. 1 over w is d by dw log w, where log w is, of course, is equal to the usual Green's function. Now, the Green's function can always be written as an integral over parameters, which some people call Feynman parameters and other people call Schwinger parameters. And other people call proper time. So we'll use that representation. So using this representation, we find that 1 over w is this is also equal to, we'll differentiate from this derivative, minus c to the minus 2, w bar, v minus w squared. So similarly, that the anti-chiral propagator is minus the integral of s to the minus 2 times w e to the minus w squared for s ds. Okay. So to compute the amplitude for this Feynman diagram, well, what we will first do is introduce a UV cutoff. I'm going to integrate st from epsilon to infinity. That's a nice cutoff, because if this is bounded below by epsilon, this function is smooth. The only singularities appear, whereas when t becomes very small, then this gets a kind of delta function singularity. Okay, so then the amplitude for this diagram, we're going to perform a standard trick, which is to observe that the amplitude is translation invariant. So we can set one point to be 0 and one point to be w. This guy is 0. This guy is w. And we kind of ignore what the psis do, because the answer will not involve any psi derivatives. We're only going to compute the integral of what happens with these propagators. This gives rise to an amplitude, which is the integral over w, integral s t, integral epsilon, s minus 2 t minus 2 w squared, e to the minus w squared, t minus 1 plus s minus 1 ds dt, dw bar. So I hope everybody's okay with this. Yeah, pretty hope. So now what do we do? How do we do this integral? Well, we're going to integrate over w first, and we'll change coordinates to get rid of this dependence in this exponential. That will produce some factors over here, and then there will be some numerical constant which we'll ignore for the integral over w. So we let's say w tilde to be w times the square root of t minus 1 plus s minus 1. Then what we're left with is the integral w tilde squared and we're going to bring down some of these factors. What we find is s minus 2 t minus 2 over t minus 1 plus s minus 1 squared ds dt. So this is some constant. Doesn't depend on the cutoff, so that's just not going to be relevant. I mean, it'll give some overall factor in the Wunder beta function. And this guy is the integral over ts greater than or equal to epsilon of and you can calculate that this is proportional to log epsilon if you just do that integral. You should bear in mind, in all of these calculations, there's going to be an I order written to 2. That's not going to play any role. So when you perform these integrals, you only care about what happens when s and t are small. So you can cut off this integral above if you want, and you will still find you're still computing the beta function. Any questions about that? Is this like super familiar to everybody already? Okay, so the reason I wanted to do this and to do it in such detail was as kind of a warm-up for a question you might ask, four dimensions. So if we have these two surface operators, and you know when they're coupled, they have a beta function. Well, there must be some kind of beta function visible in four dimensions. But it's kind of a funny beta function, because it's not, if I didn't have the surface operators, there won't be any beta function. And once I introduce the surface operators, I've broken scaling symmetry in the z direction. So the only scaling symmetry I have left is in the topological plane, the xy direction. So it must be a beta function which only has to do with scaling in that direction. That's what we'll find. So. So the 4D version of this is that there's one loop logarithmic divergence. Which is supported just on each surface operator. And is related, and the presence of this logarithmic divergence will give a beta function in the x, y plane. But maybe I'm not going to have time, I think, to do this calculation in detail. Maybe I'll do a little bit of it. But the cool thing about this beta function is that, so the Rorty flow under scaling x, y plane, what this does, if you calculate this 1D beta function, it simply moves the surface operators. Into z plane. If I have a surface operator, so a chiral surface operator, if I have a chiral surface operator at z0, then we move z0 to z0 plus h bar under the Orgy flow times some universal constant. And an anti-chiral one at z1 is moved to z1 minus h bar. They have a different sign. So as I apply the Orgy flow, they get closer together, they more strongly coupled, or get further apart and get more weakly coupled. And this actually matches this calculation. So let me, sorry, I'm bad blocking.
Somewhat similar to what happens in the
UCFQ? What are you thinking about?
Well, there's like one of the directions corresponds to an
RG4. Yeah, like the normal to the boundary.
Right.
That's a really interesting point. I've never thought about that. It might be. But so let me explain why this matches. So the interaction, so the 2D calculation tells us that if we have with this interaction, psi tilde, C gets changed by C plus H bar. Under, up to some sign, under the Orgy flow. In fact, these theories are asymptotically free, so the sign is such that in the UV, this constant gets sent to zero. So the 4D calculation, which I haven't done yet, that the interaction 1 over C0 minus C1 gets sent to, well, we're going to bring We're going to move the chiral one by h bar and the antichiral antichiral by minus h bar. So I forgot to include the. So we differentiate this expression. Del by d0 Sorry, I'm being very sloppy. Let me back up a little bit. So in the 2D calculation, we saw there was a one new beta function in a diagram which involved two vertices. That means how the coupling constant gets changed involves the square of the coupling constant because there are two vertices. So here, we found it involved the z derivatives of these guys. Of course, the z derivatives is the square of the coupling constant. So some level, it matches up. And if we do the 4D calculation carefully, we'll find we'll exactly reproduce this 2D calculation. Okay, I think maybe I'll stop there because I don't think there's enough time to do the 4D calculation properly in the remaining few minutes. But let's see. What I like about this picture is that if I put a bunch of surface operators at different points, they get moved. The chiral ones get moved one way, the antichiral ones get moved the other way by the Auger flow. So as you get this kind of geometric picture of the Auger flow in terms of these points on the plane moving around. Okay.